I feel like we could go home now and have said we've had a good morning. We want to release our kids. We have children's church today? All right, just checking. I don't do a good job reading my emails. I think I have 7,800 unread emails. That would drive a lot of people crazy, but some stuff I just don't want to read. So I pretend like it's not there. You know, when I first, I don't know, when we started teaching and preaching and Linda was leading worship, I would sit up on Friday or Saturday night and, you know, I've got my worship music playing and I'm in the zone with a particular song. And I'd text about, hey, can we play this tomorrow? And, I felt like God kind of spoke to him. He was like, hey, could you just stop doing that? You know, she's there for a reason. She's got it figured out. You know, this morning, just again, like it always is, the song list was exactly what it was supposed to be because we've trusted somebody to hear from the Lord, and she does so, and a very good job. So I'm very thankful for Miss Linda. Yes, thank you, and her willingness to listen and just be unfiltered. So I'm thankful for that. So I've got a word this morning. It's a little different, but that's okay. That's how we get down in here. I'm thankful to have the opportunity to be here this morning and share some things. But a couple of weeks ago, something kind of sparked in me before I knew I was going to be preaching. You guys, whether you know it or not, we have these side room conversations, right? There's the side room. And they normally last a good 25 minutes or so. And there's normally 8 sermons that get preached in there. And, like, we enjoy it. And, like, it's iron sharpening iron. And as we were in there starting another one, it just kind of hit me. And I think I'd taken a couple of notes. I'd put it on my phone talking about, you know, what side room conversations do we have during the week that spark us into those comments and iron sharpening iron. And I feel like, you know, at least myself, I find myself not having those conversations sometimes, right? They're not, you know, they're Sunday morning conversations and this, that, and the other. And I find myself, I guess, not appreciating the moment the way that I should, right? Because when we're in here, we're prayed up, we're ready to go, and we're appreciating that moment. And I could have a side conversation with a person during the week, and I might miss something, you know what I mean, because I'm not prayed up, and I'm not in the moment. And so that sparked a couple of things. You know, everything that you say in all the conversations that you have, they go forth, and they're fruitful, right? It produces something. When you speak something out loud, I'm going to give the guys in the back a workout this morning. Moving the camera. Chad, I'm sorry. All right, but when you speak something out loud, it produces something, right? It's either positive or negative. I've always said, you know, there are two types of leaders in the world. There's people that are born leaders, right? And there's people that have to become leaders. But the born leaders, they're leading one way or the other, either in a positive way or in a negative way. When you speak, you're getting back fruit one way or in another, either in a positive light or in a negative light. And so God just kind of put on me to start talking about the words that we speak to one another. And You all know this by now. I teach U.S. history. We got started this week, started talking about, you know, the Massachusetts colony and John Winthrop and the city upon a hill, right? I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. Matthew 5, I think it's 14. And I don't know if we have that ready. Yeah, we do. Look at there. We'll read it from the screen. It's the NIV version, the old NIV version here. Go ahead and click that for me real quick. It says, you are the salt of the earth, but what good is salt if it's lost its flavor? I know that God spoke to me about a sermon on that. I don't know, years ago, right? I don't think we understand, young folks, how valuable salt is at this time period. And I know Nick was in here. He probably had to go do some football stuff. So he's going to miss it. I got a football video I'm going to show, and he's going to miss it. That's what you get, Nick. No. Anyways, salt's very valuable, okay? It's super valuable during that time. It actually is life. Without salt during this time, there is no life. You've got to keep it to cure food. You're in the desert. Like, you, salt's important. People used to ask you, are you worth your weight in salt? And then that transitioned into gold because gold became more valuable than this, that, and the other. But what good is the salt if it's lost its flavor, right? If we're missing those opportunities to have those side conversations, what good is salt, right? Can you make it salty again? It will be thrown out and trampled underfoot as worthless. So when we miss those conversations, it's gone, right? We don't get that opportunity back, right? Now, there's going to be another opportunity for us to be salty again, and in a good way, okay? Good way, salty. Let's go ahead and read 14. says, you are the light of the world, like a city on a hilltop that cannot be hidden. Okay, so this week, this was our first week back. We started on Monday. Some of you guys got fortunate and started on like Tuesday or Wednesday. It must be nice. But when you guys are still in school and we're taking our break, I'll be smiling at y'all. But anyways, so we got started and got going this week. And it's actually in kind of the curriculum that we talk about, John Winthrop and the city upon a hill, right? And so as I'm teaching about that, obviously, we think about you and Haven, who's in the nursery. The city upon a hill, he told everybody, there were other colonies that had already developed and formed in this country, but he's telling everybody, hey, y'all are going to do it like we do it. Because one thing that they did different in Massachusetts is there was no separation of church and state. The church was the state, right? And there was good and bad that come from it. There was corruption, and we can look back in history, but the church was the state. And he said in a sermon, we're going to be a city upon a hill, right? And he goes on, can we get the next one? If not, I mean, I've got a Bible. No one lights a lamp and then puts it under a basket. Instead, the lamp is placed on a stand where it gives light to everyone in the house, okay? If there's a light lit, boy, it should have a purpose. Now, in my house, sometimes that's not the case. Lights just get left on, right? And you know, we need 18 night light. I mean, it's crazy. Y'all, our pal, we keep Buchanan lit up. So when the planes are flying overhead, y'all can find our house, Paul. I'm just saying, which one's mine, because the lights are on. But most of the time, back in the day, light was valuable because there wasn't electricity. It ran with oil, right? Right. There was different types of oils that give you this light. And so it's very valuable. It's very expensive. And so if a light's on, man, it means so. Even candles, right? Candles were not the easy. They were cheap. That was the cheap version of light. But they don't last very long, right? You ever been in a storm with a little skinny candle? Right? They don't last forever, okay? They do burn out. And so light is valuable. Okay, so what's on the inside of you is valuable, right? Because it's not your light that's in there, it's his. And so your light is valuable. It's valuable like salt. It means something. And so when we're in the middle of these conversations and we're walking throughout the day, just me having a conversation is adding value to someone in one way or the other. It's either a positive value or a negative value, right? That is determined by us and how we decide to filter or to not filter what we say. Right? And so those things are super important. And so I started looking through all those things, John Winthrop, and then I wrote this down in my notes here because we've got a lot of stuff that's kind of happened in our church recently. I mean, it's hitting on every spectrum, right? We had a service here Tuesday for Alicia, right? And we've had babies born. Right, we've had all kind of things that hit on every spectrum. We got folks going back to school. We got folks getting out of school. Like there's a lot of things going on in the West Georgia area. Like tonight, you know, it's going to be awesome if you got young folks that are around high school age. The worship on the lawn, right? That's happening tonight. Madeline, I know, is leading. Is Noah playing at all on that one? They didn't forget about you. They're saving you, you know. No, they promise you. So anyways, and that's a collective group of kids from local high schools going to, you know, FCA. If your kids are not involved in FCA, I highly encourage you to help push them in that direction. It's good ministry. But every high school in West Georgia area is going to be represented there tonight. They're going to worship Jesus. Like, that's the point. I mean, so we got a lot of things happening. And it's the busy time. We're all back in school. Kids are back in school. Now we're running. We got football or soccer. There's a lot of stuff going on. And here's what I wrote down. It says, there's no larger opportunity than tragedy. Like, there's no larger opportunity than when things are not going good. I know I've preached a couple of sermons in here about the Facebook and the Instagram folks, right? They only post, like, the filtered pictures of how awesome their life is. Nobody's going to post, hey, man, my dog died today, you know? You know, like, they're not posting that picture of Fido ran over on the road, right? And that's a real thing. Okay, I hate to be great, but it's a real thing. They're not posting, hey, man, dad just got diagnosed with cancer today. Like, they're not posting that raw picture. They'll ask for prayers, right? But most of the time when you're living that life, it's all the good stuff, right? That doesn't change people. You know what I'm saying? You know, that kind of breeds some malcontent with some people. People that aren't believers, it could breed, and even believers, it could breed some malcontent, right? Immaturity, right? And so I wrote something down that I tell my wrestlers all the time, tell our football players all the time. Growth, and you've heard this, I mean, growth only happens in uncomfortability. If you lift weights, you're only getting stronger when your muscles hurt at the end of the day, right? You have to be sore. Otherwise, if you just go in there and lift the same thing you did for the, I know you don't lift, man, but we're going to get you there one day. When you start lifting, okay, if you're lifting the same thing over and over every single day, you're not getting any stronger. Like, you maintain, right? You're the same. The only way you get bigger is by becoming uncomfortable. And so what you've got to do is break those muscles down by lifting something heavier more times, and then growth can take place. It's the same way, guys, in our own personal, spiritual, emotional life. We're only going to grow when things aren't the way they're supposed to be, you know, when things are a little bit tougher. You know, the situation with my earthly father, right, and mother and all those things, which is not that, you know, everybody in here knows somebody or is somebody that comes from a split family. Wouldn't trade that for the world. Wouldn't trade it for the world. Like, if I could go back in time right now when it all went down and fix it, wouldn't do it. Because you don't know how many kids I've been able to look in the eye over the last 20 years that I've been able to say, hey, man, I've been where you're at. I know exactly how you feel. You know, my dad didn't do this, my mom, but I know where what's going on right here. And that's invaluable. Like, I have something that I can give somebody that no one, you know, a lot of other folks can't. And so through our hurt and through our tragedy, through our pain, through our uncomfortability, we get growth. And when we get growth, our light is even more valuable. Our salt is even more salty, right? And so I think a lot of times we get this mindset when we're in the middle of that growth process. It's not fun. Look, if you've ever been at a 5 a.m. four-day practice, don't have those anymore. They've outlawed them. That's how crazy they were. But, like, we used to not have 2 days and 3 days. We just had days is what you would call it, because you would be there for the day. You'd get up in the morning, go lift, practice 18 times, lift again, eat. I don't know. It was crazy. In the middle of that, it's not real fun. I mean, it's really not. Like, that would be the prime opportunity to be like, it's not that important to me. I'm going to walk away from it. But it's because of that that growth gets to happen. There's a reason football teams practice year-round now, right? Because they understand the opportunity to grow and get better. Now, personally, you know, I think it'd be good to get your summer back at some point in time. Probably football coaches' wives would agree. So that's but they do that because they understand the value and the opportunity to grow and get better, right? Same thing with wrestling. We understand the opportunity and value to grow and get better, right? And so I started looking at some of the things that we had take place. And I'm going to take you a little bit through my Friday, and then here in 4 or 5 minutes may play a video. But so Friday rolls around, and I don't know if you guys are aware, but the Olympics have been going on. I'm aware of them because I like them, okay? I'm a big fan of the Olympics. They happen one every 4 years, and there's one thing that – there are two events that have been in the Olympics since the Olympics began, and one of them happens to be the thing I'm most passionate about in sports, and it's wrestling. Now, here's the bad news for Jamie White is Tokyo time is a little bit different time than West Georgia time. And so late at night, we watching wrestling in the bedroom. I got TV, got bed, and we watch early in the morning. We watching wrestling because that's when the medal rounds go. So for about 3 or 4 days, she's going to sleep hearing whistles blow and me go, oh, come on. And then she, like, literally yesterday morning, Kyle Snyder had a gold medal match, and I think the round started at like 6. So we had to have that on, make sure we don't miss it. So she's been in a tough spot. But Friday, we had three big matches, right? Had three big matches Friday morning. So I got up early, and I was at the house watching Sarah Hildebrandt wrestle. It's a female wrestler. She ends up winning bronze. But on Friday, man, she blew it. She blew it. I made a post about it. I put it on Facebook. That's how serious it was to me. Like, I was angry. Like, you know, she gets up 7-0. She's 3 points away, and I will try to dumb down some wrestling for everybody. She's 3 points away from what you would call the skunk rule. We call it a technical foul in wrestling, but it's skunk. 3 points, and it's a ball game. So she comes out, and she's dominating this chick from China, up 7-0. And I saw it. I watched it happen. My family knows I watched it happen because I was commenting on it. She stopped wrestling to win, and she started wrestling not to lose. Okay? There's a huge difference. Okay? She wrestled. She's got a lead. She squared up and said, hey, I'm just going, where's the clock at? Started watching the clock, looking for the time to run out. She gave up a takedown about 5 seconds left, lost 9-7. I was angry. I said, you know, this is one of the best female teams we've ever had. Wanted another gold medal, because she's good enough to win a gold medal. She's good. Dominated the rest. She ended up winning bronze. But it's a Friday morning. You got Sarah Hildebrandt that just stopped wrestling to win. Well, then I go into work, and I watch another couple of matches, went our way. And then anybody seen Gable Steveson yet? Anybody got any social media on him? Yeah, my son. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. It's my dog. It's my dog. That's my dude right there. So Gable Steveson is a man child, okay? He's our heavyweight wrestler. He's 21 years old. 21, that's young in wrestling years. Like most of these guys that are winning gold medals are 28. They got that man strength developed. You know, there's a difference between boy strength and man strength. You ain't got to lift weights. It happens. Yeah, everybody. If you don't know about it, it's a real thing. Well, he's wrestling these grown men, and he has demolished some dudes. I actually called him to win the gold medal. Y'all check my podcast out, shameless plug. Called him to win the gold medal beforehand, and he's in the gold medal match, and he's wrestling the guy that was the Olympic champ at the last Olympics. He'd already beaten the world champions, right? He comes out, and he's up 5-0. He's winning the match 5-0. I'm like, man, he's going to do it, 21 years old. And I'm in my classroom, and it's early, and people are checking on me, like, is he okay? Because there's loud noises and, you know, furniture being moved and stuff like that in my classroom. And, man, I was excited. I even had up, like, oh, I got a little light-up sign now that goes outside my room. It says, Go Team USA is what it said. So, anyways, he's up 5-0. He didn't stop wrestling, but he got in some trouble. He made a mistake. And the other guy goes up 8-5. The other guy hit a couple big moves in a row. We're down 8-5. There's less than a minute left, and that is not a lot in wrestling time, okay? And I'm like, oh, man, my heart kind of drops. Like, you know, and I'm already conceding. I'm like, you know, silver's not bad, you know, for a 21-year-old kid. 12 seconds left, he's still down by 3 points. Now, a takedown's only worth 2, so even if he takes him down, he's still down by 2. Well, he gets a takedown, 6.5 seconds left, and they blow the whistle. He's only down by 1. And with a half a second left, he gets a takedown. Like, I had like 8 people in the room now at this point that they don't know what's going on, but they're watching and enjoying it. And it's one of them, like, high fives, like, we're pumped up, Ric Flair, woo, you know, we're all having a good time, go team. And dude's 275 pounds and does, like, a back gainer for a celebration, not a back flip, or back, like, goes running and then just jumps up. And it's impressive. Look him up when you leave. He's an impressive individual. So it went from angry, super amped up, happy, excited. And then 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, one of my people, I call him my people, it's a young person. There's a difference between my students and my people, right? There's a difference. I got some that are, those are my people. We're tight. One of my people walks in the classroom, and I could tell this person was upset. But as soon as they walked in the room, it was gone. I'm talking about just mushed up, just snot and tears, and they're hurt. And when my people hurt, I hurt, right? When my people hurt, I hurt. And they had just lost someone their age, close to them, passed away. And guess what? There's not a whole lot of words that fix that. And I know we just went from talking wrestling to this, but this is exactly how my day went, right? And I'm super thankful to have a God that pushes me in the right direction, because had I not had the Holy Spirit living on the inside of me right then, I might would have missed an opportunity, right? And so we took an opportunity, and me and my good friend beside me and some of this person's good friends, we've got 20 minutes to kind of love on this person, because nothing we say is going to fix anything. I could quote this book that's alive 100 times to this person right then, and they're still hurting, right? They're still hurting. So out of tragedy is our greatest opportunity to shed our light. Out of bad things is our greatest opportunity to shed our light. And growth happens in uncomfortability. What could have happened, right? And I know a lot of people would have done this. We got counselors. That's what they get paid for, right? It's their job. Could have ushered that on out, sent it on down, followed the protocol, and sent them on down to the counselor and ushered them out. Could have punted that ball to somebody else, right? Could have said, hey, man, this has not got me written all over it. Let me give this to somebody else that can handle that. Let me give this thing away. But I got a light. Right on the inside of me. I'm salty, right? I'm a little salty, and so it's important for me to do that. And then I'm gonna segue just a little bit. This morning, I wake up, and I'm doing my things. I go through my routine, and then part of my routine is after I do what I need to do, you know, may get up, may pray, may do whatever, is I check Twitter. Okay, that's my news, because it's not filtered. So I checked some Twitter for some stuff, and Bobby Bowden passed away. Now, it doesn't mean a lot to anybody probably younger than me. Bobby Bowden was the head coach at Florida State for 127 years. Yeah, he was there forever. They were not Florida State until Bobby Bowden got there. You know, he's a football guy. And the reason, here's why this comes into play. Maybe 2 months ago, right, I'm driving down the road, and I think I even told Jamie, if I didn't, just pretend like I did. I'm kidding. I got this weird unction to write Mark Richt a letter. I ain't been at Georgia in a long time. Georgia fan. I just got this weird thing. I need to write him a letter. And then I talked myself out of it because, like, how are you going to get this guy this letter? He's not going to read it. You know what I'm saying? We're going to send it to him on Twitter. You know, can't find this guy, you know. So I was like, probably don't need to. Well, then I find out nobody knew it beforehand, but I got a phone call. Somebody called me beforehand. Our welcome back speaker at Carrollton, Mark Richt. So I found out a little bit beforehand. I don't know if you saw me, Amanda. I put my, had my Georgia tie on that day and wore my Georgia socks, and I was in the front row. I used my side key. I broke into the building. Wasn't supposed to get in till like 8:45. It was 8:20. I done used my little key, done got into the building. When I was sitting by myself, people were staring at me. I was like, y'all don't know what's going on, but I know what's going on. And so I got my little letter in hand, and I'm going to tell you, that guy, I don't know if you know, they had announced he's got Parkinson's. All right, and it was the greatest little tweet ever because he's like, hey, guys, just want to let you know, I've got Parkinson's. It's not that big a deal because I know where I'm spending eternity. So whatever happens on this journey, I know eventually it ends with me having a big party, basically, is what his, you know, it was awesome. I mean, golly, how awesome is that? So he comes out. They're introducing him. They're building him up, you know. So, like, a lot of people don't know, but, again, I know. So I'm edge of my seat, like, ready to go. And they're like, well, you know, he's born in Colorado. Nobody knows. Mark Richt was born in Colorado, played football, and, you know, then he went to, you know, University of Miami. A couple people starting to pick up on a little bit, about three, and then they talk about that and how he started coaching at Florida State. And then that's when people in there, like the men folk and a couple ladies, there were some ladies that was crazy in there too. You got some of them West Georgia, like, whoa, man, started yelling. And then by the time they introduce him, I don't know how many people we have that work at Carrollton City School Systems, but it fills up the MAC, which is about, what, is that 1,500 people? 1,500 people on their feet, you know, for this guy, clapping, excited. There's a lot of hoo-hoo-hoo, and there's all that stuff. Dude walks out from behind the curtain, and, like, he's just broke, man. And, I mean, he's just crying. He just cries for 20, 30 seconds, puts his hand in his head, and, you know, he takes it in. And the whole time he speaks, by the way, I mean, he talks about some Georgia Bulldog football. He talks about pouring into people. But the whole time he speaks, he makes no bones about making sure people know where they're going to spend eternity. Like, it was awesome. It was very cool. But during that speech, he talked about Bobby Bowden. And I don't know if you know this, but he really, like, that's his dude. That's his mentor, right? Like, that's his guy. That guy led him to the Lord. For those of you that don't know the story, I know a lot of you Georgia fans do know the story. But for those of you that don't know the story, Coach Richt was coaching for Bobby Bowden at Florida State. And I don't remember the year. But a kid on their team died, okay, was shot up, okay? And so they go in, they have a team meeting after this, and Bobby Bowden stands up in front of it and talks about what's going on. He says, listen, guys, I don't know where this cat ended up. I don't know. But if you don't know where you're going to end up, you need to come see me. Well, he's telling that to the team, and Mark Richt's a coach, and Mark Richt knocks on the door and is like, listen, dude, that's me. And got led to our Savior in a coach's office, right? I don't know how old he was. And so that's how important that guy is to him, right? In that letter that I wrote, and I'll share this with you guys, there's at least a page and a half. It's a long letter. I don't write letters like that. It's a long one. Talking about a night that I got to spend with Bobby Bowden when he was at Carrollton. Do you guys remember that? Anybody around here back then? It's a long time ago. I was coaching at Bowden, and they paid for us to go listen to Coach Bowden speak in Carrollton. And Coach Richt was the coach at the University of Georgia at the time. And so Bobby Bowden, I think, spoke for 3 hours. It seemed like 3 minutes because, I mean, it was just one of them where you're just sitting on the edge of your seat. But a page of that letter is talking about how much Bobby Bowden bragged about him, how much he talked about him and it edified him and that. And then this morning, again, Coach Bowden's no longer with us. And that's how God works, right? Could have been easy to kind of punt on that, like 800 people going to write this guy because he's, you know, got diagnosed with Parkinson's, this, that, and the other. So anyways, I'm hoping that finds the where it's supposed to be. It'll be read when it's supposed to be read, if that makes sense. But anyways, there's football, and it's football season. I wanted to show a quick video, so hopefully it's ready. And it's got to do with football, but it's a lot more spiritual than you might think, okay? Obviously, got Coach Rick and Coach Bowden here. We're talking about putting. So if it's ready, we'll watch this really quickly, and then we'll preach a sermon from it.
Ace, tailback, stack, Z. Z, your other Z. That's just bad. No, Ace, tailback, stack. Ace, Chase, for the love of God, son. Too late.
God, I mean, come on.
Serenity now. Just serenity now. I'm the head football coach at Pulaski Academy in Little Rock, Arkansas. I call myself a contrarian thinker. There's a lot of contrarian thinkers in the world that have been highly successful. We approach football in a different way. We rarely ever punt, and we onside kick after every touchdown. My name is Kevin Kelly. I'm known as the coach who never punts. All right, line it up. Let's go. Fourth and three. Know where the line is. Let's go. Got to get to it. You know, when I started it, I was just trying to find a way to win. In my school, I guess in 36 years, they had been to the semifinals of the state playoffs twice, and we couldn't get past that. Miles, that's incomplete because you juggled it. You know, I could see a write-up in the paper, the news story is, you know, crazy nut job coach going for fourth downs. Zach, you got to make up for it. Hastings isn't here. You got to be the guy. I'm a person that believes that humans make mistakes when they base decisions on emotion. The disruptive moment that's helped make me who I am today was I had a really tough life growing up. I've got a dad that is an alcoholic dad, and, you know, I think he loves me. But there was an incident at home that occurred. I reflect on that at least once a day, I would say. And sometimes it makes me sad, and sometimes it motivates me, and other times I know that it's helped make me who I am. I've always been a numbers person. I majored in accounting my first two and a half years of college when I took over. You know, I thought, my job is to help the kids win as many games. And so we started getting inside the game, started asking little things. Why do we eat the way we do? Why is our pregame the way it is? Why do we punt the ball? And I ran across a Harvard professor study that dealt with the numbers and probability of different spots on the field and different values of those, and I realized that people punt the football and they don't need to. Let's say it's fourth down, we start with the football on our own 3-yard line, and we don't make a first down. The other team's going to score a touchdown about 92% of the time. If we punt the ball, the net punt's going to be on average to about the 37-yard line, and they're going to score a touchdown 77% of the time from that point on the field. That's only a 15% difference. If you add those numbers all together, they'll show you that even in extreme situations, inside your own 10-yard line, you should not punt the football. Where are you going, Cootie? Lord, where are you going? Fourth and six, know where the line is, gotta have it, let's go. The kids are the easy ones to convince. They play video games all the time, and they never punt in football games on video games. So they were the easy ones to convince. And then when I showed my coaches and they realized that it gave us a better chance to win, they were on board. And then the rest, you kind of don't worry about. When I first realized that other coaches really figured out that this was not a one-time gimmicky thing, that this was a philosophy, I thought that was disruptive. Doing something different just to be different, that can't sustain itself. It has to contribute to winning or it falls by the wayside. And now, since I've been the head coach in 11 years, we've been to the semifinals 8 times and been to the finals 5 times and won 3 state championships. Oh, no, I didn't ask what you were going to do. I said, why? Because I got tired. Hey, good reason. Y'all get tired, y'all just quit. Finish strong on everything you do. Never quit on anything in your whole life. My kids that are now out in society come back and say is, it helps us try to attack problems differently, not look at the way necessarily everybody else is doing something. You know, there is some success to be had by going and stealing other ideas, but there's also a lot of success to be had from creating your own answers.
Right.
The truth.
I actually had to change my video up this morning because we couldn't get the first one to play, and so that one has some different terminology in it. So if you got some spiritual eyes and ears, you could pick out a lot of things from that particular video. One thing that was in this one that's not in the other one He said the kids were the easy ones to convince. You know? Isn't that always the case? Like, what happens to us? You know, does the world, I guess, infiltrate our brain and tell us that this thing doesn't work the way that it is? What happens, man? Don't lose that, guys. That's if we've lost it, let's get the thing back. And so here's the thing that I pick up from man, that was just that got me as I was watching that again. You know, for really the second time I saw that particular video is it wasn't hard to convince the kids. The kids are like, all right, coach, you tell me to do it, that's what I'm gonna do. If you tell me to do it, that's what I'm gonna do. So in the video, he says, the analytics, the numbers say there's no reason to punt. Okay, there's no reason to punt. The analytics say that, you know, there's only 15% difference, even if you're kicking from your own one-yard line. Like, there's no reason to punt the football. Yet people do it. And you know why people do it? Because that's the way it was always just done, you know. We don't want to take a chance on something bad happening. Well, it's going to happen anyway, according to the numbers. The numbers say even if you punt this football, 77% of the time, they're still going to score a touchdown. Not a field goal, a touchdown, 6 or 7 points, right? And so the analytics tell us that you should never punt the football, okay? Weave this back into U.S. history class, okay? There's one thing I know me and Paul really share right here. I love this piece, okay? The first flag that flew over these United States, right, in battle is the Appeal to Heaven flag. Most of you haven't seen it. It's a big white flag with a pine tree. Yeah, pine tree. Yeah, you see that? And at the bottom it says, an appeal to heaven. Well, there's a story behind the pine tree, and, you know, talks about that as the main export coming from that area at the time. Well, the appeal to heaven goes back to John Locke, who some of you remember, some of you don't. I'm not going to ask you any questions. It's okay. We're not in class. John Locke wrote social contract theory, right? Shaking your head. You learned that stuff, didn't you? All right. So John Locke wrote the social contract theory. We quote that all the time because it's evidenced in our writings, the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution. He influences it heavily that we have a social contract with our government, right? And it's the government's job to do X, Y, and Z. And if the government doesn't, he calls it our duty to leave, right? Well, even prior to that, he writes that when it comes to the point that you can't do anything else, make an appeal to heaven and ask God to remove these tyrants, right? I love that, man. I got the flag in my room. I even got a t-shirt on that says appeal to heaven, got a flag. Like, I'm jacked up about my clothes. We were so wrong. Why did we have to wait until dire straits to make an appeal to heaven? That's the falsity. You should make an appeal to heaven, but you shouldn't have to wait until things get to the point to where there's no one else that can handle it. Because the analytics say that you should always make an appeal to heaven. Philippians 4:6, okay, if we can pull that up real quick. 4:6, Philippians 4:6. Here's the analytics, people. Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for all he has done, okay? Don't worry about it. Pray about everything. Not pray when I need something. I need you to come through now, God, because I couldn't handle it on my own. So now I'm going to pray to you. Please, pretty, 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 please, with a cherry on top. That is not what the analytics tell us. The analytics say pray about everything. And I think in this particular translation, the one that I've got here, I'm going to open it up so I can read it to you. Because I wrote some definitions down. Y'all know how I am with my definitions. I'm all about some definitions. In this one, let's see. In 6, it says, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation by prayer and petition. Do not be anxious about anything. I am sick and tired of that word right now in our culture because it debilitates so many people. Anxiety. To be anxious means to worry, have an unease about yourself, or be nervous. To worry, have an unease about, or be nervous. It says be anxious about nothing. Don't worry about anything. Don't be uneasy about anything. Don't be nervous about anything. Because really, most of it, guys, is probably beyond your control anyway. Right? You control what you can control. Don't be nervous about anything. Pray about everything. And as I think in this one here, I think there's another version that says supplication, which means to ask humbly, right, for these things, right? So pray about everything. Ask humbly about all these things. And here's something I need to loose all of us from. We sang these songs this morning, which were on point. We're talking about how How much more does he love us, right? And he's going to do all these wonderful things. He's going to decorate the lilies. He's going to take care of the birds in the air, right? And he does those things. But let me tell you something. It is not always going to look the way that you want it to look. We read in this Bible, there's a man that was taken care of by the Lord. He sent him away, right? Sent him by a brook, and a raven brought him some food every day. I don't know about y'all, but like, that's not my vision of paradise. Sitting beside some water, thanks for the bread, crow. You know, like that's like I want a ribeye, right? Like I want to have the house with the white picket fence, and I want to take pictures and show everybody, look how blessed we are. Sometimes you're blessed just to be sitting by a brook, because that's the way God wanted it. He's still providing for you. You still don't have to be uneasy or nervous about it, just because it doesn't look the way that the rest of the world tells you it's supposed to look. Because on 4th and 15, you're supposed to punt that football away. You're probably not going to get a first down. Get rid of it. Man, you just lost your job. We got to quit. We got to shut down for a minute and reset. No. Nope. Because you got a light of value that's on the inside of you. It's going to get put where it's supposed to be. He's sovereign. He's in control. He understands. It doesn't mean that bad things don't happen to us that were created by bad people or bad situations. But it's not going to look the way that we want it to look all the time. Yes, he's called. He wants us to be the head and not the tail, the first and not the last. But out of tragedy comes growth. Out of soreness comes growth. And if you don't get those things in your life, you're not going to grow up. He's not called us. He says, again, in the Word, at some point in time, you got to get off the milk and get on some steak. That's scriptural. They don't say it like that. You can look it up, okay? Get some meat in your life, okay? I had a vegetarian kid this week in class. I prayed for her Friday night, too, right? She went vegan on me. Or what? She said, we're plant-based now. I said, God love you. I told her, I said, look, God gave you a pig for a reason, child. Bacon is delicious. But anyways, I digress. You need some meat in your life, okay? But it's tough. Meat's tough to digest. Do you know that? That's why people go plant-based, okay? Because meat is tough to get through your digestive system. And so your digestion does get better when you ain't on some meat. But Jesus tells us, the Bible tells us we should be on some meat. And meat's tough. It's not easy, right? You can prep that thing and you make it tender. And I like doing that. That's fun. But it's tough. It's still tough on your digestive system. So I think we in the American church have gotten this false sense of entitlement, which is going through our generations as it is right now anyway, that, well, because I love the Lord, he's going to give me all these things. That's not in the analytics, okay? He's going to love you more than anything, and at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, the shooting match is over, and you go home one way or the other, yep, that's what's going down, because it says it in the analytics. But right now, you're going to have some growing pains. You shot up like a foot this year, man. Dude's gotten taller. Okay, ain't nobody tall in the White family. We've gotten taller. You get some growing pains in your knees. Damn, my knees kind of hurt. It's because it's stretching out, son, like you're getting bigger, right? So you're going to go through some growing pains, guys. But in everything that we do, we should pray. We don't get to punt. That's not an option for you. So I'm telling you right now, on the 8th day of August in 2021, it's not an option for you. You can't punt. You can't get a ball away. It's been given to you for a reason. You are salt and you are light, which is valuable. Salt and light have value. You have a value, and you serve no one by not letting that. It's an endless supply. That's the best part. It's an endless supply. Now, you're going to feel better some days than you do other days. You're going to be sad some days because somebody passed away. But you still got a light to watch you walk through that tragedy. Don't be anxious about anything. And now you're sitting here going, Nick, man, like, that's hard. Like, it takes a lot of effort, right? I hit a time in my life to where I was so busy, and I stay busy. I guess I just like it. Like, you know, I do my teaching deal. I got my radio gig. I coach wrestling. We coach in 7th grade football. Like, if I can do it and be involved in it, I've had a time in my life where I'm like, man, I know he's going to be out of town. I hope James is in town. I hope he's there so he can preach. I hope Marty's going to be preaching this morning. I'm being honest with you this morning. I'm not telling you I'm right. I'm being honest with you because you know what it takes? Like, for me, I can't just come up here and open. Like, I need prayer and supplication, just like it talks about, right, in Philippians. I've got to take some time, and I got to manage that time. So I've had times in my life where I'm like, man, I hope maybe somebody else can take the ball and run with it. God gave me that ball. I've got light and I've got salt, and he wants me to use that thing. And it's a reminder of that. Let's go over to Galatians 6:9. So if you're worried about, you know, man, I got all these bad things in my life, I can't move forward, I got some analytics for you, okay? Got some analytics for you. I'm going to read what I got in here. It's pretty close to the one that's up there. Galatians 6:9, I believe is where we are. Let us not become weary in well doing good. Okay, let us not become weary in doing good. For at the proper time we will reap the harvest if we do not give up. If we do not give up. That's the one thing you can't do is give up. You can get beat, but you can't give up. You can get beat down, but you cannot give up. The coach said it in the video. Hey, that's right. You know, you're tired. Just quit. Just give up. And that's not it. We can't live that life. That's not what we're called to be. There's no reason for us to give up because we know how the end ends. Stephen got stoned to death. It wasn't pretty. Okay? But guess what? His end is amazingly beautiful because he's got all those things he's promised right now. He's got them. But when we quit, when we give up, when we don't let our light shine, when our value of our salt becomes unsalty, man, we ain't living that life. And the word says, don't become weary. It says, do not become weary, for at the proper time. Guys, you either believe he's sovereign or you don't. You either believe that he's in control of the whole thing or you don't. There's not an in and out on that. Well, I think he's in control of a lot of things, but, you know, there's some things that, no, he's either in control or he isn't. Yes, we influence things. The way that we live our life, the way we activate our faith absolutely makes things happen when they're supposed to happen. But you either trust him or you don't. He said, don't be uneasy. Don't worry. Don't be anxious. Okay? Don't be anxious. Don't grow weary in well-doing. Don't grow weary in well-doing. Do not give up. And I'm going to go ahead and read verse 10. Therefore, as we have the opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who belong to the family of believers. Therefore, when we have the opportunity, let us take it. You got the opportunity to get a first down. Take it. You've got the opportunity to get something done. Take it. And either way, you win. Either way, he gets glorified because you're either going to be successful and you're going to say, man, it's because of big guns upstairs, or you're not going to be, and people can watch you work through not being successful. People will watch you work through that opportunity. And that's our choice, right? There's where the choice piece comes in. We get to choose whether we're going to let our light shine. We get to choose whether we're going to let our salt be salty or if it's going to be trampled underfoot. But you have the opportunity. And verse 10 says, therefore, take that opportunity. As we have the opportunity, take it. I heard a sermon preached, and I've referenced it several times. 20 years ago, I guess. I was going with a friend down to Florida, and he's saved, I'm saved, and there was a third friend coming that wasn't saved, and we were traveling on Sunday, and we just wanted to mess with him, so we just stopped in a church on Sunday afternoon, evening to go to church. He's like, man, oh, come on, man. You know, I'm saved to church. I want to go to church. So we took him in, and we got our times mixed up. We made it to the we came in at the end of the sermon, so the pastor was closing with this, and it's always stuck with me. There's a B part to this story, too, that's just not for this morning. But he said, look, he's talking about baseball, and I've said this before from this pulpit, and he said, Hall of Fame average, like guy plays 10, 15 years in major leagues, and he bats 300. That's going to get you in a Hall of Fame. You do that 15, you go in a Hall of Fame batting 300. 7 out of 10 times you get struck out or you fly out or you grind out and you sit down. 7 out of 10, you're failing. 3 out of 10, you're successful. So just because you don't get to hit does not mean that you ain't getting where you need to be. It doesn't mean that he's not getting promoted. And I don't mean that batter. I mean he's still going to be promoted, right? Whether things happen the way that we want them to and want them to happen, or we end up sitting by a brook waiting on a bird to bring some food. Either way, he gets the glory. Either way, his legacy gets pushed on. But if we don't ever step in the batter's box, no way you're getting a hit. I'll take 3 out of 10 praying for somebody to get healed. I'll take that. I'm sorry. I'd be sorry to the other 7, but I'll take 3 out of 10. I'll take that because that's better numbers than we're rolling in right now. I know that's hard, but it's true. I'll take 3 out of 10. I think part of the reason we ain't getting hits is because we ain't stepping up to the plate. We're not going for it on fourth down. We turn it over. You can have it. I can't answer. I can't pick up 12 yards. No, you can't. He can. He can. But we've got to be able to step in and do our part in that piece. Okay? And the reason that I know that this is the way, it's just all throughout Scripture. I'm not going to make you click there. 1 Corinthians 9:24 talks about running the race to win the prize. That's not being soft. You know, that team made up of a bunch of unathletic kids, okay? I think he won 3 or 5 state titles. He just got hired for a college job. I think he's the Presbyterian Blue Hose coach now. But Presbyterian, he just got hired for a college job. Unathletic kids won a state title because he had to do something different. He had to look different, had to be different, okay? He didn't go out there just to do the best we could or to coach the team up. He ran the wet race so that he could win the prize. The prize is a state title. Got a lot of former athletes in here, like Beth, right? We know what it's like to go win the prize. Sometimes you just got to put your head down and go get it. I mean, seriously, there's a difference between competing or participating and competing, okay? A lot of 5K people, y'all participants. I see y'all. Y'all ain't trying to win that race. Y'all trying to survive the race. I made it through my fun run 5K. Wasn't nothing fun about it, but you was there. You participated. You got a T-shirt, and you wear around. I participated, okay? And then there's that guy. Y'all seen him at these 5Ks, and like y'all know, he's in it to win it. He's got the booty shorts on, high socks, you know. I mean, he's stretching up. Like, he's there to compete to win the race. I don't care if it's the number one guy in the 75 and older division. Like, he's ready to go. Y'all seen the guy. I know him. I've met him. I'm like, dude, what makes you want to do this? I'm like, I'm going to win this thing. Like, he's there to win the race, okay? We're supposed to be here to win the race. You can't take – you. Oh, it's just Monday. I can't wait till Friday. Whoa, back up, Air Speed Racer. You better take Monday because that's an opportunity to win the race. You better take Tuesday to win the race. You know, super successful soccer season. Y'all didn't just show up and play on game day. A lot of hours went into that, right? I'm hoping for your sake. There's a lot more hours that go into it this year, and we get over that hump, right? But you can't just show up on game day and compete and run it to win it. It's a daily thing, and some days are going to be better than others. But at no point in time do you have the ability to quit. You don't have that opportunity. That's not one, according to the analytics, that you get to choose if you're a believer. Okay, that sets the difference between us and non-believers. How can you go through this the way that you went through this, man? I'd shut down. Well, I'll be honest with you, brother. It ain't got nothing to do with me. It's because I've got a relationship with Jesus Christ. How's that any different? Well, then you get the opportunity to have a conversation, probably the most important conversation anybody could have. So through death, there's life. Through that young person in my room, seeing somebody pass away, there's an opportunity now to talk about life. This young person is going to have the opportunity to commit themselves to our Lord and Savior through a very tough opportunity, right? So through that, there's a life that comes from it, okay? And if that's not enough, I got some more stuff here, but it's not about time. I think we're getting it, I think. Joshua 1:9 says, be courageous, right? It says, be courageous, and by the time you hit verse 9 in Joshua, okay, this was an FCA thing. It was a good one. By the time you hit verse 9, I think he said be courageous like 4 times. It's 3 times, I think. Maybe it's 3 times. And he said, have I not, by the way, did you not hear me the first 3 times I told you to be courageous? Like, we shouldn't be afraid. New Testament, we just read it, Philippians. Don't be afraid. Don't be uneasy. Don't worry. How many times throughout the word does it say, hey, I'm with you. Don't fear. I'm with you. Don't fear. I'm with you. Don't fear. It doesn't say I'm with you. This thing's about to go the way that you want it to go. But it says, I'm with you, don't fear. I'm with you, don't fear. Don't be afraid. You may hurt, but you're going to grow. Because out of hurt, there's growth, right? Out of pain, there is growth, right? Instead of reminding ourselves that he's with us, a lot of times we look to the earth for an earthly example. We don't check the analytics. We look at what the rest of the world has done, and we react that way. Did it when the pandemic began. What's everybody doing? Better buy a bunch of food. Better go home. Better do this, that. So we reacted how the rest of the world reacted. And some of those things are smart, just logical decisions. Did you pray about it? You probably prayed for some safety. I did, right? You probably, Lord, please don't let it take care of us. But did we pray about every decision? Or did we wait till it got real bad and then started praying for some help? Because that's not what we're supposed to do according to the analytics. Looking to anything other than God statistically doesn't make sense. Does not make sense for you as a believer. You have chosen to be on a path to where he tells you to pray about everything. You don't have the choice to not to. Really, as a believer, if we're a disciple and we're supposed to follow and obey and do the things that's in this word, you shouldn't be just doing whatever you want to do because it feels good or it makes sense. You should be praying about everything. I mean, and I know it sounds a little crazy, pray about where you're going to eat lunch, because you may end up running into somebody and you get the opportunity to just walk through there and smile and thank the cashier and leave, and them go, man, there's hope in the world. You don't know. You'll never see some of these opportunities that you may take and do the right thing with. But if you're not praying and listening to the Holy Spirit and doing the things that he wants you to do, you'll never be in the spot that you need to be in. So I would tell you, don't worry about keeping up with the Joneses, okay? Because you ain't the Joneses, unless you are Joneses. But you ain't them, you know what I mean? I have to tell my kids this, and I told you and Haven this morning. There's a quote that's been preached on in this church before, and I love it. It's by a lady named Marianne Williamson. It's in my to my notes at school, and I make sure at some point in time we talk about this. But the long and the short of it, it starts and it says, you know, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate, but that we are powerful beyond measure. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, talented, fabulous, gorgeous? And the real question is, who are you not to be? Because it goes on and it talks about how he has created you for a special purpose, right? And that you're fearfully and wonderfully made. There's nobody like you. There ain't another soul on the planet like you. Not one. You are the only version of you. And whatever clothes you want to wear, don't pick them out because that's what everybody else is wearing. The music you want to listen to, don't listen just because. Now, if you like it, that's one thing. But don't be that person that just goes along with the flow. Right? Be you. Because there's nobody else like you. And nobody has the same salt value that you do. Nobody has that same light that you do. It all derives from the same, but it's coming through you, right? And it's important because you're going to influence people that no one else can. Okay, that's the facts, okay? You're going to be salt for somebody that no one else can be salt for. And if you're living your life based upon how this person lives hers, right, you might not be as effective as you could be. You may miss the opportunity because you are you and there's no other you. So be loosed from trying to keep up with other people. And I always am talking to young folks because that's my calling in life, right? But adults, that's you too. I don't care what your shutters look like. If that's the end thing, you know, they're doing the old country shutters now. And that's the thing. I don't care what your shutters look like. I don't care what your carpet is. I don't care if it's 40 years old or if you just put it in. Good for you. Like, I'm happy for you, right? But, like, there's certain things that are new I don't like. I play it safe more. I'm 10 years behind everything fashion-wise because I'm going to see if it sticks or not. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then I might give it, like, y'all remember, what was it, the little moccasin shoes they wore for a long time? Y'all, I'm talking about those slide-on little moccasins. Weren't Sperry's. What were those things? See, I don't even remember. Like, I didn't wear them. Everybody was starting wearing moccasins again. I was like, guys, we graduated from moccasins years ago. Now, we got a full shoe, like, now that you – set the whole foot, like, you know, I wear shoes because they come. Guys, I'm wearing Crocs right now. You know why? They feel good, okay? I stand up all day in these Crocs. They're dress Crocs. Y'all wouldn't know it. They're nice now, okay? But that's why I wear them, and you can ask my wife. I bought the same pair of shoes for the last 7 years before school starts. The same pair, the same color for the last 3 years. They look exactly the same because they work. They do their job the way I need them to do their job. Now, there's some people that wear the dude shoes. Those are pretty cut. They ain't as good as these, okay? That's why I wear them. There's people that, you know, Paul's going to have a pair of combat boots on every day because, like, he's ready to stomp somebody out if he needs to, right? And that works for Paul. You know what I'm saying? So there's different things about life that are going to work for you. I know we're talking about clothing and being funny. Like I literally talked to a guy last night. He told me he was the last member. He still has his own members only jacket. Like he's like, I think I'm the last member. But like he still got it. Okay, and he wears the thing. And he's proud of it because he likes it. It works for him. Be you. Okay? Be you because you're the only version of you. Can't nobody do your job, man. You're the only one that can do it. You're the only one that can wear Crocs. You're the only one that can do it the way you want to get it done. You know what I'm saying? Take the opportunity. Don't punt. We got a lot of stuff sitting in our lap right now. This bad. Okay? There is. There's a lot of, I mean, man, you want to talk about division, negativity in the world, in the church, you know, politically, just in our country, guys. Really, in the West Georgia area, we could dial it down to right there. And there's a lot of heavy stuff that's got to be dealt with. And we can choose as believers to let somebody else do it, or we can do it. That's why politics have devolved. You realize this. And I'm chasing rabbits now. But politics devolved because people didn't want to be a part of it anymore. Okay? So when it started, you had your representative, but the people have the power, right? The people, you know, you can make your own laws, right? You know that. You don't need someone to make them for you. You can go around, get some things signed, and it gets put on the November ballot, and the community votes yes or no. You can do that. It's a lot of work, man, and it's 4th and 48, and man, I just don't really want to get involved. I gotta get some signatures, and I gotta talk to people. Might even have to spend some money. Like, we got a senator for that. We just let him do that job. That's why politics have devolved, because we haven't taken an active role in them. You want to get them fixed? Get off your tail. Right? I hate to be that way, but those are the facts, Jack. You don't get the opportunity to punt. You don't get the opportunity to allow your politicians to be the only people that influence politics. Okay? Because if we're supposed to pray about everything, that's part of it. That's part of it. So, I don't feel like we should have an altar call this morning. I think we're going to stand to our feet and we're going to pray and we'll get up out of here. But as you go throughout the week this week, y'all go ahead and stand up. As you go throughout your week this week, here's the things I want you to do. I want you to look for your opportunities. Don't punt that football away. Look for every single opportunity that you have to glorify the name of Jesus. I need you to know that just because something bad happens doesn't mean that something bad's going to continually happen, right? To push through it. Don't punt the football. Take opportunities and don't wish Monday away. It's coming, man, and it's got a son coming up for somebody. Okay? Work's tough, but so are we. Okay? Because he's going to take care of us. Lord, we just come to you. Thank you so much for this day, God. I thank you for the opportunity to be in this house, God. I'm so thankful to be surrounded by these people this morning, God. I pray that as we go forth throughout this week, God, that we see the opportunities that you have set before just us, God. I pray that we spend so much time with you, God, that we can hear your voice telling us where we're going to eat. God, telling us which direction we're going to take in the hallway, God. And so I pray that we pray about everything and not just the big things, God, that you are so involved in our life, God, that people can see you dripping off of us, whether we're in good times or we're in bad times, God, because we know that you're the author and the finisher and you control it all. And we give that to you, God. We give our faith to you, God. And we thank you for touching us this morning. I'm thankful for this word, God. I pray that we would be ordained and righteous throughout this week. In Jesus' name, amen.